So many sermons in Orthodox institutions begin while I was driving on my way to church. While Helene and I were driving on our way to church last night, we approached a rainbow, an absolutely astounding rainbow that went all the way down to the ground. And then as we made our turn off of the 210 onto the 57, there was a double rainbow. And it was incredible. If people had not been driving by me in the rain at 110 miles an hour trying to kill me, I would have stopped just to look at that beautiful rainbow. And Helene turned to me and said, "Can you imagine in a primitive society what it must have been like for them to look at a rainbow?" Going, "Dude." Well, a modern primitive society. "Dude, what's that? Why is there this arc? Why are there these colors? Give me an explanation of what it's about." I want to talk about science, religion, and humility. Humility is probably the most difficult of the virtues. And do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. That walking humbly thing is really tough. It's one of the most difficult of the virtues and one of the easiest of the vices or sins. Because the great thing about the opposite of humility is arrogance. And arrogance is just so versatile. I mean, arrogance, you can be arrogant and condescending and sarcastic and snarky when you're absolutely sure of yourself and you're absolutely sure that the other person is wrong. And you can be just as arrogant and condescending and forceful, if not more so, when you're afraid you might be wrong. So arrogance is kind of, it's the little black dress of it goes everywhere. You just decorate it up. Humility and arrogance are two of the things that human beings work with and against. And I know that the kind of default position in most scientific and intellectual communities, and that means also Unitarian Universalist churches, is that religion is about superstition, about rigidity, and science is about reason and proof. And science is always willing to change, and religion is never willing to change. Well, it's not true. How can I put this? Not too fine a point on it. It's human beings who have difficulty in changing, in adjusting, in having a new relationship with the facts of our lives. We were talking this morning, Jennifer and I, about why it is that a Reform temple keeps kosher. And it's not because they think God is going to strike them dead if they bring in a shrimp salad. Depending on the mayo content, the cholesterol may strike them dead, but it's not going to be God directly anyway, because I don't have a theology where God is cholesterol. It is a question of tradition, and for people who are brought up a certain way, you walk into a temple and there's shrimp out there and you go, "What's wrong with this picture?" Some people, as we were talking about, were brought up in religions that don't have alcohol and walk into a church and there are Mai Tais being served and wine being sold and beer being sold and they go, "Oh, you know, this is a tough adjustment." It's hard to adjust our reason and our emotions to almost any kind of change. It is true that religions tend to change more slowly, often, except in Southern California, than science does. But science can be stubborn too. They laughed, not just the church, but they laughed at Galileo. Many mainstream physicists resisted Einstein up through two Nobel Prizes. Einstein resisted constantly Max Planck, and he understood that he had his own innate conservatism. What I want to deal with are the archetypes, the stereotypes that we have of religion versus science, and to say we need in both systems some sense of balance and of humility about what it is that we believe. If religion is about faith in things unseen, then what was I dealing with when I sat on my balcony in Mexico looking at the ocean, which was like an infinity pool, that the ocean just stretched out to the horizon and the sun set into the ocean at the edge of the horizon and it grew larger and larger, and I expected the sizzle and the steam to come up when it went into the water. And I'm looking at the water, and I'm looking and seeing a sense of curvature, and I'm going, just a second, I believe the world's round. What evidence do I have of that? Oh yeah, there are pictures. I'm sure they could be photoshopped. There are theories. I'm sure that any theory is as good as any other. But if the water's there, how does the water stay on when it's in Australia? Why doesn't it fall off the bottom? I don't understand. Oh, there's this unseen force called gravity. Oh, now it's getting a little weird. There's this unseen force that's holding the water on, is there? And I believe this. Now, I do believe this, but I believe this. Based on what kind of understanding? My deep and abiding faith in my high school physics teacher that I understood nothing from. So not only do I believe that gravity is holding the water on, but I also believe that the Earth is round and turning and spinning on its axis at about 1,000 miles an hour. I can't believe my hair's in place. And not only that, but the Earth is going around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. If I jump up, shouldn't I go smashing into the wall over there? I don't understand. And not only that, but hang on to this one. Did you know that the whole universe is flying apart? And we thought that the acceleration of the flying apart would slow down, and then eventually maybe the universe would contract in on itself and start all over again in a kind of Hindu recycling procedure. But no, now I need to believe in dark matter, which is unseen and is making the universe expand. Are you ready for this? At 1.8 times the speed of light. But I know deep, 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 deep from my high school physics that nothing can go up to the speed of light, certainly not go the speed of light plus 80%. That's not possible, but they explain. Well, you understand that matter can't go faster than light, but space can expand faster than light, at which point I'm in about the same position as somebody sitting in a bayou somewhere with a very cheap wine and going, what, huh? Because I don't understand it. I believe it, but I don't understand it. And I am not arguing that all silly systems are exactly the same. I am arguing that we believe in all kinds of things that we do not understand partially or completely, all kinds of things that we do not see, all kinds of things that we don't think about. As we sit in this room, and if we do the kind of rainbow test and bring somebody in from a primitive society and say, do you know that in this room, as we sit here today, there are, oh, probably 20 television stations that are playing, that if you had the right equipment and the right fillings, you could tune in, and there are pictures and sounds. There are probably 200 radio stations that are all playing in here. All that music is going around, and there's a way to pull it apart and just get one station. Not only that, but there are also probably a couple of 100 million telephone numbers flying around through this room, and text messages, and some of you may be doing that now. But we don't see them because we're not tuned into them, and we don't think about them, and we don't think about the wonder. We don't think about just how truly remarkable existence is. One modern physicist was talking to a friend, and this is a true story, not an apocryphal one, and said, boy, is this theory that we have too weird? And his friend said, no, that's not the question. The question is our theory weird enough? There is nothing that anybody believes that is stranger than the truth. Now, I understand that's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it is true. There's nothing stranger in my scientific beliefs of how the universe works and that the universe is that is stranger than the most primitive religion, earth-based, sky-based, turtle-based, to the most sophisticated pseudoscientific Scientology. It's not a question of whether it's weird. The question becomes, what can we do with it? What does our understanding lead us to do with how we perceive and assemble the world? In a philosophy of science class that I took back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, my teacher talked about, listen, Occam's razor says, take the simplest explanation that you can do the most with. So when I think about, for example, the evolution of the word atom, well, it meant originally indivisible, indestructible in the Greek. That was the Greek picture of the atom. Then Einstein's picture became different. Madame Curie's picture became different. The picture of the atom with which the first atom bombs were built was different from the atom of the 19th century and, of course, from that of the ancient Greeks. The atom that Disney showed us all, the little solar system, is very different from the atom of today, which is quivering strings. We are talking, even when we are talking hard-headed science, about metaphor and how we understand and how we can manipulate metaphors. My old professor said that, you know, we could explain a chain reaction of good angels fighting bad angels, but it's so hard to calculate with the angels, so we use mathematical shorthand. But they are, in fact, metaphors. We don't believe in strings. The strings are a metaphor. We had a great example this morning. The music. Music is not right or wrong. Music is not true or false. Music evokes in us something. Do I have to believe, Panis Angelicus, that this is bread for angels, or that there are angels and that angels eat bread? Do I have to get into the scholasticism of it, or can I just close my eyes as I did and let it happen? Let it touch me. Humility and arrogance, they're hard to deal with. It's hard to say, I don't know, I don't understand, I want to understand. It's easy to put down other people's understandings or misunderstandings and beliefs, but the test of a thought, an idea, an emotion, a symphony, a song, a theory, is what we end up doing with it. How it motivates us to understand, to build, to heal, to break, to destroy, how it brings us to rage and anger, or it settles our hearts. This is the power that we have in science, in religion, and with art. I am not saying that reason and religion are the same or equal. The philosopher Wittgenstein said it is not how the world is that is mysterious, but that it is. How is the science, and that is the religion. Or as NPR said this morning, how is the science and why is the religion question? They're two different questions, two different views of two different sides of the same wonderful rainbow. I think I can understand scientifically a rainbow. And if I don't understand it correctly, I want to find out. I want to explore. I want to know the difference between reflection and refraction and how the spectrum is broken up. And that's fun and neat and important, and it leads to things with telescopes and with glasses and with prisms and with science. And I also want to be able to go and look at the rainbow and just go, wow, wow. Our world is pretty remarkable. Existence is, in a sense, inconceivable. We need to try to understand where we've come from so that we might try to manage where we're going. But there are also those moments where we just say, in some kind of humility, wow, I'm alive. Wow, there's existence. Wow, there are things that make my head hurt, and I love it. I'm going to spend probably the next week trying to wrap my brain around how space can expand at 1.8 times the speed of light, but matter can't, and what it means for space to be something where there isn't anything there. I don't get it. It's okay. It's a thought problem that involves us in thinking, in examining, in engaging with the world and the facts and asking questions about facts, asking questions about truth, and asking questions about how can I use these things to bring rainbows to the lives and the hearts and the souls of all of the people in my life and in my heart.